2, 1. I'm just going to do it. I've been recording this too many times, and I just need to put out the damn episode. So welcome. This is the Zebel Rebel Podcast. I'm your host, Talia Herring, and this is a podcast where we rebel against Zebel one episode at a time. Zebel means trash in Hebrew, and this is going to be a podcast where we talk about the trashy habits that cause climate change. The Zebel Rebel Podcast is home to all things sassy and sustainable. Every episode, I will interview rebellious environmental leaders and educators, sustainable businesses, and experts sharing their ideas and concerns, and hopefully some hope for a more sustainable future. So click follow. I'll wait. And I hope you followed because that was embarrassing. Okay, so because this is a podcast that is going to fuel your rebellious side and get everyone excited about climate action, I need you guys to listen in, pay attention, join the conversation, share with your friends. Like, let's make some noise. Let's make this rebellion happen. So for those of you who are listening from the Zebel Rebel community, this is going to sound a lot like my rants on Instagram stories, and I hope you're in store for that. And for those of you who are tuning in that aren't familiar with Zebel Rebel, I don't want you to feel left out of the love fest. So in short, Zebel Rebel is a traveling refill shop based in Tel Aviv. We sell biodegradable cleaning products in containers that already exist. And this cuts down on the plastic bottles, the packaging, the pollution involved in creating the plastic bottles. It also is a great environmental education platform with a slightly sarcastic tone, and most importantly, a beautiful, thriving community of all these rebels that are taking amazing steps to reuse and rethink our trashy habits. This podcast is a soapbox for answering the questions that I get asked on the daily, but also most importantly is to give the platform to people that are doing amazing, amazing things for the planet and to share some ideas and get us thinking about what we can do. So to start off the first episode, I reached out to the Zebel Rebels on Instagram asking them what they want to hear from this podcast. Maya, a Zebel Rebel that actually just refilled a big giant detergent bottle this week, asked if she could send in some interview questions. And since I will soon be the interviewer, I guess I should start off by being the interviewee. I don't know if that's a word, but we'll go for it. So she sent in these questions ahead of time, and I'm excited to answer them.
Okay, so I would absolutely love just to get to know a little bit more about you, Talia at Zebel Rebel. What made you more sustainability conscious? What really like opened your eyes? Because I feel like we all get like these like little hits of knowledge randomly throughout your page, but we don't actually know what triggered it for you. I'd also love to know what your projections are for Zebel Rebel. Give us a little bit of a sneak peek, and I hope that you do a podcast about you and an introduction to you and your wonderful work.
So I think a sneak peek would be a little bit too complicated to share all the shower thoughts, but in general, Zebel Rebel is going to be big. Like, I just have this gut feeling. It's not going to be a small business. Like, I'm still experimenting with exactly what plan I want to focus on before I lock down which method, and I know it's going to ebb and flow and change as I find the right path for me, but I know it's going to expand, and that's kind of all I can give you for right now. So about the initial wake-up call about how I felt responsible about living more sustainably, well, a little bit of background. I am from San Diego, California, meaning that my family had a compost in the backyard, but also we shopped exclusively at Costco, where it is their hobby to package everything in crazy excessive amounts of plastic. And of course, we always put the plastic in the recycling bin, as one does, believing that that was what we needed to do, and that was the correct and good system. I was taught to shut the water off when I was brushing my teeth, not to litter. I was always in love with the outdoors, but I didn't really connect my relationship to nature as a mutual relationship. I just recycled, used my reusable water bottle, thrifted, but that was kind of the extent until I traveled to Asia. After I finished law school, I was volunteering in Nepal in a remote village, and us volunteers were instructed to burn our own trash, which sounds crazy, but that was kind of the waste management system. There wasn't other infrastructure. That was how garbage disappears in that area. So what we had to do was every time I ate a food wrapper, I used a piece of toilet paper. I had a light on fire. I collected it, put it in a bag, and brought it to the bonfire area. That action was education at its finest. I felt so responsible for my trash, and I felt completely confused as to how it took me to the age of 25 to think about trash in this way. Like, something clicked for me, and I saw my adopted family in the village grow their own produce or walk 40 minutes to the bazaar where they brought their empty rice sack to buy more rice. And it was so natural for them to reuse without having the eco-friendly stamp of approval, right? It wasn't trendy. It was just normal. Just purely economics. It made sense for them to reuse. And that was reusing. It wasn't a mindfulness connection to what it just was simple. And I loved it. And we ate popcorn every morning because apparently there was a big corn harvest that year. So when it was fresh, they ate hot popcorn. And now that it was the end of the season, we ate popcorn literally every morning, which I have no problem with. It's my favorite snack, right? But I did have to steal a little bit of salt from the kitchen, but it was a great way to start the morning. And wow, the overly sweet tea. Side note, I don't know if you've been to Nepal, but like, Nepali food is great. You got the lentils, and vegetables, a lot of rice, totally down for it. But the amount of sugar added to Nepali tea does not make sense. Like, the ratio just doesn't make any sense. I don't get it. Like, what? It's just like literally a pack of sugar. Anyways, I digress. So anyways, in Nepal, I was so bothered by the piles of trash in the cities, right? You are on these buses. Wow. Nepali buses, another rant. But I could still picture it so clearly, looking out the window and just like the river is piled full of trash. Like, that was the view. And I would cross these bridges and I'd look down at the river and I'd be like, trash. And then, like, this sounds very judgmental, right? I'm like, trash everywhere. But it wasn't towards Nepali people. I was just in shock that like this was happening probably everywhere in the world, but it was kind of hidden and out of my view. Like, this is what a landfill is. It's just we kind of cover it up and we ignore that this is what's happening, but I know that it's happening. And it was just like the breakdown of understanding that this is like an educational and infrastructure issue. Like, if you don't have a system that works well to take trash away from you, it kind of relinquishes the responsibility because everyone is leaving their trash everywhere and it's comfortable and it makes sense. And like, why would you think otherwise? When we were hiking with my adopted family and I would pick up trash, they would start to pick up trash with me. But it wasn't that I was teaching them or like pushing my habits on them. It just felt very natural in a way that we were both asking questions. They would ask me questions why I'm doing something, and I would ask them questions about their way of life. And it wasn't glorifying one side or the other. It was just kind of exploring the differences and appreciating instead of imposing my values that like these are correct or these are just what I'm used to. It's just like what I'm comfortable with because that's how I grew up. And I also felt like when I was trekking Everest Base Camp, I felt so ashamed of being this Western traveler burdening the locals with my trash. Like, I would refill my water bottles and I would purify my own water, but I still was creating trash while being there. And also I was eating food that they were preparing for me and I was part of it. But I would see these Sherpas like carrying these heavy amounts of water bottles up the mountain, bringing down the trash, and just felt absurd, just literally confusing in this like very, I don't even know how to explain it so well. And then after Everest, there was just one night I was very, very cold. I was like, get me out of here. I'm going to the Philippines. So when I was traveling to the Philippines, I learned about the closure and rehabilitation of Boracay Island. I don't know if you're familiar with it of this, but during the time I was there in 2019, it was just reopening. And pretty much they closed this island for 6 months because it was just overrun by tourists. They had exceeded their capacity. Just mind-blowing to think about this, right? Like, you know what overpopulation is. But then to see it in reality, to see the actual limit, they were 30% above the capacity, meaning that locals didn't
have the opportunity to use electricity, or they didn't have clean water. They didn't have a sewage solution, right? Because tourists, they didn't have the regulations, of course, of limiting tourism. And that's on regulation, and that's on the shock of what increasing the wealth of a neighborhood or a location or a developing country is. There's a lot of dynamics in sustainable travel, right? But I was just amazed that there is a finite limit of resources in a limited space. And that is a great metaphor for me about sustainability, right? We're talking about the earth, the planet, and our limited amount of resources. We can't just use electricity thinking that it's endless. We can't use water thinking that it's endless. We can't just pollute thinking that everything will get absorbed and it'll all be okay. And all these carbon emissions are just going to, like, you know, chill out until we figure it out later. So it was a really cool metaphor that really stuck with me, of me appreciating the beauty of these places and me enjoying traveling and wanting to travel more, but also swimming in trash and this plastic floating in the Philippines and being so upset that, like, this is what we've done to this natural beauty. And so I came back to Israel, and I was in this legal clerkship for a year. And I moved in with my friend Gavi in Tel Aviv. Gavi and I had been friends for 7 years, since we both bonded over our love of burritos and ranting about boys. And we used to be super, super close, you know, the type of friend that you text every day. And it's like a lot of emojis. But then he got really cool for me in Tel Aviv, and I was studying abroad in Germany. And over the years, it kind of, like, shifted and flowed. And then when I moved to Tel Aviv, our friendship really became this whole world. And we did everything together. And he was the best tour guide to Tel Aviv. He does food, like, shuk tours in the local markets in Tel Aviv. And so I got in on all the delicious foods. And our apartment became this home of secondhand furniture and yummy vegan food. And it was the first time that I was, like, building a home in Israel since I was 18 and I moved out of my home in California. It was just really special to not be in a student apartment, but just, like, literally feeling at home, building a home with someone else. And this apartment was just filled with plants. And it's actually very cool in Shapira, a neighborhood in Tel Aviv. They have the system with the senior citizen center, and that they sell plants at a nursery, and you could actually bring your compost and exchange it for this neighborhood currency called a lira Shapira. And there, that money can also be used for plants or in coffee shops around town. And I loved the concept, and it felt good to be part of it. And it really inspired us to start composting. So we were living this whole lifestyle, right? So now that we had our home filled with plants, and I was only shopping secondhand clothing, and we were eating mostly plant-based, it just felt silly every time we had to replace hand soap or dish soap or detergent, buying these, you know, cleaning products in this thick plastic packaging. Like, it just felt like I knew it was going to landfill, knowing that this was just going to live there indefinitely, picturing Nepal. Like, it just was the same situation, just out of my sight, so out of mind. And it just felt excessive. So Gavi and I were talking one night, and he was showing me this video from a refillery in LA. And I've seen the video before, but I was like, no way, it's not going to work here. We don't have a van filled with surfboards that we could just happen to use that's laying around that we could convert into a refill shop. And I was so hesitant that it would work here. I guess I was still in the mindset of working in a law firm and being an employee and not really being an entrepreneur. And Gavi comes with a lot of dreams and business ideas, and he's always brainstorming and living this mindset that everything's possible. So we came up with this idea, and I was like, I don't know, what are we going to do? And then we were thinking about maybe a wagon, maybe we'll do pop-ups in the meantime, sell out of our house, like, eventually get a physical store. And I was like, okay, let's do it. Let's try it out. And he came up with the name Refill Aviv, like Refill Tel Aviv. And Aviv also means spring in Hebrew, which is just a great name. And we opened up an Instagram, made it look really hipstery and cute. The next morning, before heading to the law firm, I grabbed my camera and took a photo of an empty hand soap bottle and laid it on the wooden table with a nice morning light, and took a picture, edited, sent to Gavi with a draft of the caption. And I was like, okay, it's happening. And we got to work. And within 2 weeks, we had our first pop-up in Cafe Shapira, which is another wonderful little local cafe here with a refrigerator that you can donate food to, and cafes bring over leftover bread, and it kind of cuts down on food waste, and they have compost bins, and it was just a great spot to start this. And that was our first Refill Aviv pop-up. It was just a high. So exhausting, but so much fun. And to see people's excitement that this initiative could exist, and they're like, oh, I heard about this happening outside of Israel, and it's so exciting that we can make it happen here. And I hope you guys get really big, and everyone coming up with different ideas and different thoughts about environmentalism. And just, it was so exciting. It was so freaking exciting. And people, mostly it was like international crowd that showed up, because Gavin and I both are from America, so we speak in English. And I guess it's less of the Israeli mindset. Plastic is very ingrained in the day-to-day life here. It's very common for Israelis to have like a stack of disposable plastic cups in their house and just use that for sips of water, or eat out of plastic plates just when sitting for a quick bite at home. It's very, very common. So we started this Instagram. We made posts educating people about plastic and using biodegradable soaps and what that means to live a more sustainable life. And we were getting this momentum happening. And of course, what happened? Another lockdown. I was so naive. I was so naive that Corona was over after the first lockdown. And then it just kept on happening. Another lockdown, another lockdown. And these pauses, it's just like, it was hard to keep the momentum. And I was studying for the bar exam after my year of working in the law firm, and I couldn't really dedicate a lot of time to making pop-ups happen. And Gavi was mostly making the Instagram posts for the holidays. And then after the bar exam, I went to visit my family for a bit, and I got stuck there because the airport was closed. And I was living at my brother's in Utah, literally skiing every day, taking care of my nieces and nephews. And I posted on Instagram a few different stories and posts and thoughts about living in the mountains, about time with my family, about like sustainable lifestyle. And I felt very torn between this idea of just wanting to like climb as many mountains as possible and knowing that I might have failed the bar exam and that would delay everything. And I just didn't really get what was happening. And I finally got news that I passed the bar exam, which was, wow, such a relief. But I also knew that, like, shoot, I can't go back to working in corporate life. Like, I'm not going to do that. I need to do something in environmentalism. And there was no way I was just like going to, I didn't know how to like reconnect everything. And I was looking into environmental law jobs, but that might have not been the type of work I want to do for like the right side of what environmental law regulation could be. So there was like this question mark. And I came back to Israel, and Gavin and I sat down. We had a bunch of conversations about what we wanted and to reconnect. And Gavi was also like really growing his spice business at that time, because he was doing a lot of food tours before Corona, but because of tourism being cut down, of course, he was expanding more of his like online sales of making spice art and sending spices abroad. So we sat down and I expressed that I wanted to dedicate my time to this, and we weren't sure how we were going to split up time and responsibilities. I went for a few job interviews at law firms, but it was the decision to turn them down, saying, I need to start my own business. It's an amazing opportunity. And if I don't do it now, it's not going to happen. Like, that was like, holy shit moment. This is happening. So Gavi and I decided to prioritize our friendship and stop working together. It was such a hard conversation to have, like a breakup, but not a breakup, because we both are so involved in each other's lives and businesses and really respect each other. It was definitely the right move to understand that we work at different tempos and different styles. And it kind of was one of those first lessons of learning that business isn't absolute. There's no straight lines of failure and success. It's all a mush of problem solving along the way. Like, that same way that we don't live together and we're still really close and we still have that connection, that's how it feels like with our business relationship now. Like, when Israel had that super rainy storm a few weeks ago, I totally just camped out by Gavi and stayed with him for the whole week. And it was so nice, even though we aren't roommates, it felt like we are roommates. And it's so nice that even though we aren't business partners anymore, we're great at co-working in the same space and bouncing ideas off of each other and supporting each other. And I'm very, very thankful to have that in my life. And the next chapter was rebranding. I realized that I didn't want to make a physical retail shop for Refill. I wanted it to be a movement, not just in Tel Aviv and not just Refill, but a freaking revolution against the trashy habits that brought us climate change. And this was very clear to me. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I was like, this is Refilling as the first step of educational experience. The fact that our customers save up bottles and prepare them and store them up and to think about it and to plan in advance and bring the bottles and refill and physically hold a bottle that otherwise would have gone to a landfill. It's just It's like those travel moments I was sharing beforehand. It's these really exciting, powerful moments that can kick start other change. Like it can really motivate this snowball effect of other things. And people come in with so much excitement. Wow, watching people refill is the best. They come in like really excited with their little bottles, like a kid going to a candy shop, right? They're like, it's my first time. I'm like, I know, it's everyone's first time until you do it. And I think it's really exciting and powerful. And people are, they are the refill. Like they, I just really cherish the conversations. I don't know. It just, it's so wonderful because they're refilling, but the conversation of what's happening and we're talking about what plastic means to us and why we're excited about this. And that bonding experience is very meaningful. Even if you're one person refilling one bottle, your friend will see it in your house and they'll ask a question about it, or they'll be on your schedule and people will see that. And then it'll bring more awareness. It'll bring more conversation and more people to understand that this is an option. And I just, that I think is what I love about refill, but also I know that refill is not the end all be all. So that's what Zeva Rebel, Refill Aviv, that's what it's been until now. There's these amazing people that come to the pop-up shop and the conversations and these badass women that are, sorry, it's mostly women, sorry, men, but it's like 99% women. That's the customer base. It's just these women that come that are so excited about being part of this movement with so many ideas. It's taught me so much. That's kind of like what this podcast is about, is I am learning endlessly in this process and I love learning and I want to hear more from more Zem Rebels, and I want to be able to share that. There's so many amazing environmental causes and sustainable businesses and startups and nonprofits and policy approaches, and there's so much to learn from, and it's so fascinating because the more you learn about climate change, the less scary and doomed it feels. It feels more of a fixable issue that we just need to commit to, and that's one of the things I'm gaining the most from this journey. And I'm grateful for this opportunity to connect and to learn. And I want to share this platform with people that really need to be sharing their voice with more people. And I want this to be a resource of hope and deeper understanding about climate action. It can be very frustrating to gain access to information that even though I've made this my job to learn and to know things about plastic pollution and climate change, it's so hard to actually know what's happening on the other side. Like you have to trust a lot of the systems and figure it out and what's greenwashing and what's pretending to be sustainable and what's actually taking very deliberate action to do the things that you are intending to do. People ask me all the time about recycling, and it really varies by each neighborhood and what type of material and what type of plastic. And I just, It's so much. So it's nice to like talk to people that actually work in it, and then they can break it down. They can explain, and it allows us to feel a little bit more comfortable with these topics and breaks that wall that usually detaches us from responsibility. And now we can take ownership, like just how I was like taking ownership of every wrapper. It's very clear to me that it's time for us to take ownership and to understand. So what's happening with Zeva Rebel right now? My main goal is informal education. I'm selling refills in Yafo on Sundays, and I do pop-ups in Jerusalem once a month, and I sell in the Garden of the Karim once a month. So these are all very important to me, and it's in between. I'm working on ways to make refill more accessible and creating a lot of educational material. I'm giving speeches and working more in sustainable advocacy. I recently started to sell at companies doing refills there, and I want to create more relationships with sustainably minded corporations and get more partnerships happening. I just view it as like kids learn at home or at school, and adults, where's their school? They learn from the media or from the workplace. So if I want to influence adults, showing up to the office with a clear message is the best way to make that happen and empower those that are already on the team, save the planet. Let's speak up. Let's like give them more motivation to speak up. And people that are a little bit like not climate deniers, but not necessarily taking action, to give them some actionable, you know, plans of this is something you can do that will have an impact, you know? So that's what I was thinking. That's what's happening there.
Okay, this might be shady. But what are the top things that bother you in the zero waste, low waste, eco-friendly community? meaning people who say that they're zero waste or they're low waste, but all they do is buy everything from Amazon, like six different types of reusable bottles, and they keep buying new ones. Maybe there's like bigger issues in the zero waste community or in the low waste community. Like, what bothers you in our movement, in the revolution, that you wish we could improve upon?
There's some really great examples. I just think that some of the issues with zero waste mindset is being very focused on our own individual actions, that we kind of forget about the bigger, more systematic aspects of the chain. There's the internal criticism I have on myself all the time of that, like, okay, yay, I saved one cup, but does that make a difference? And that question is very challenging. But the first time that I bring something or I switch something in my habits, that needs to happen in order to lead me to the rest of the changes that I'm going to make. And those changes that I'm going to make hopefully will spread out to other people. If I have a conversation with someone who works at the cafe, or if I have a conversation with a friend, and it has a snowball effect. So that does exist, but it needs to be multiplied in order to actually have an effect, right? It's like reading one chapter of a book and thinking that you know the whole book versus reading the whole book, knowing that there's so many subsections of different environmental action, and they're all important. They're all necessary. It's not just one thing. And we like to get hung up on one thing. Like, that's the solution. Number two, I would say, is that when companies are making big claims and we can't really understand what is greenwashing. This is more about sustainability and less about zero waste movement. But you know, we're talking about, you know, organic, recycled cotton. And what does that mean? Like, are the people that are in the factories actually getting rights? Are they being treated fairly? Is this shipped across the world? Is it packaged in plastic? Like, what is happening here that we can actually feel comfortable that it's quote unquote green? Because I see these like labels 100% eco-friendly. I'm like, what does that mean? Give me details. Give me qualitative terms of what that means.
Okay, I would love a starter guide to becoming more sustainability conscious, whether that be great podcasts, book lists, YouTube videos, people to watch out for, a TED Talk, kind of just like a starter guide for someone who wants to start opening their eyes to the climate crisis specifically.
I think for that, I'll make a blog post. Wow, so many different things to talk about there. That'd be fun.
Okay, let's be honest. None of us actually know much or anything about the climate crisis as much as like we want to say that we do. I would love for you to break down maybe the top three things that you wish that common people, common folk would know about the climate crisis, because it's super important.
A really good question. I think it's even cool that we're using the term climate change instead of global warming. I grew up using the term global warming. That's what I was told about. And I think vocabulary has a huge impact on action. Like, the thought about polar bears and ice caps melting, it feels very distant and it feels kind of foreign and not urgent. And now that we're using the term climate change, it actually represents a much bigger issue, right? It's about the temperature rising, but also about carbon dioxide and air pollution and our climate literally changing with different weather patterns and precipitation, and everything is changing. When acidity levels in the ocean are different, it's not just the temperature rising. Temperature is a good measurement that kind of helps us understand the rest of the changes, but it's not everything. So it actually represents a much bigger issue. And I like that we're using this term. I was actually in a lecture about this, about how the natural cycle of the temperature of our planet, how it's warmed and cooled over many of centuries. And I'm not a scientist, so it's hard for me to put this in correct terminology, but the regular cycle of what's been happening is now being stopped and we're going off the normal course. So as people, since the Industrial Revolution, we have altered the acidity levels in the ocean. We have changed the makeup of how the planet has worked until now. That is climate change. Number two, I would say that we talk about climate change and what we can do about it. There's a very specific goal that is barely agreed upon by world leaders. Like, this is what the annual conferences are at COP26. And we're talking about like the Paris Agreement, like trying to get these terms accepted by world leaders is crazy. It's very much about accountability and the lack of accountability. Kind of, we agree to these general terms that don't actually force us to make actual change. So now the temperatures have risen to 105 degrees Celsius. We actually feel about 1 degree Celsius increase because of all the air pollution in the atmosphere. It kind of blocks the sun from coming in, and that creates a barrier effect from the heat that we should be feeling more heat than we actually are. Which is kind of interesting to think about, like a creepy benefit to air pollution. So back to global warming. Okay, so the goal of fighting climate change is to stop heating from going above 1.5 degrees by 2030. And that was agreed upon 5 years ago in the Paris Agreement. And we're kind of still pretending that it's attainable, that it's far off, that we can get to this goal. But it's creeping up very quickly. We're already in 2022, and it's not a very far away goal. I think it's very freaking soon. And I'm really scared that we're just going to keep on pushing these things off without actually making the change. Like, I don't know. That's scary for me. And number two is our moral obligation. Ready? And this is going to get a little heavy, so I apologize in advance. But, you know, this is my podcast, and I'm going to say what I want to say. We can either decide, us as world leaders, individuals, companies, we get to decide, do we care about the people that are living in island countries in warmer climates, near coastlines, poor countries that don't have the infrastructure to deal with temperature changes and climate changes and more hurricanes and more fires? Do we actually care about them? Because if we're down for them just to die or to become refugees or to go without food, then okay, we can continue living our life and hopefully we'll be okay. We have enough money that we'll just like bunker down and we'll survive this, right? Like places like Russia or China, that they have so much land and they're not in such warm climates, that they don't need to care about climate change for their own survival because they have enough land that they could figure it out. So the question is, do we care? And are we willing to make major sacrifices on our convenience to show that we care? Like, that's what I'm thinking, you know? Like, Israel's a small country, right? What are we going to do? And in Tel Aviv, we're so close to the water. This past summer was so hot. No one wanted to do anything. This is going to impact our economy. This is going to impact our livelihood. This is going to impact the food we eat. This is going to impact our families. Like, what are we going to do? Because in my head, this needs to be a very urgent priority. And that's a very selfish thing, in my opinion, just like our survival and our comfort. So that's an intense description, but I think that we need to decide if we care. And we have to be okay the fact that, like, this is going to impact our lives. It is an investment now for future generations and for our comfort. And it is very much about taking responsibility. So that's what I would say about that. And number three, okay. So number three is that there's this trope that individual action doesn't really matter. It's only about big policy, big corporations that are taking advantage of us. We have to stop them. They are the main polluters. Nothing that we do makes a difference. And I agree with that, but I also would like to bring some nuance in understanding that there is a correlation, right? Companies that have gotten very wealthy by producing coal and gas, they need to be held accountable for their part of polluting our planet and climate change. But how did these companies grow and become successful? They got money from us from paying them. We, as the consumers, we're part of the process. We're part of it. So I don't understand how we're expecting policy and the government and big companies to just magically enforce something that we are not demanding. Like, we have to demand it. The government has to answer to our needs. And right now, we're not really demanding it enough. We have started to, right? Like the Friday strikes for climate. That shit is powerful. That's like, you got to listen to Greta Thunberg speak and like, you don't know what to do with yourself. You have these chills and it's calling us out on our BS and these fake promises. And it's like, wow, yes, I love it. But that only just started now. And until now, we've been allowing these things just to continue. So we can't really blame them for continuing. And okay, there's a really good quote that explains this. I don't know how to put it into cognizant words, but pretty much the idea is me right now not using my car or like putting it into context of my life, right? Me bike riding instead of taking a car doesn't really have impact on the planet. But in order to have impact on the planet, it means that everyone's life is going to change radically. So one person radically changing doesn't do any difference, but like that is the reality of what we're going to need to be able to fight climate change. And in order to have, you know, that change, it's like we have to be ready for it. So I don't know if people are aware of that. I don't know if they maybe they're aware, but they don't like sit with it. But I need like everyone to just like take a moment and like kind of meditate and like let this simmer, because it really is important to know that we're going to have to make a change in our consumerism, in our habits, in the things that we've gotten used to over the last 50 years are now going to need to change. It's only been 50 years, right? It's not like forever, all of humanity, all of time. It's still recent in the timeline of the planet. It just feels very settled because that's what we're used to as of now.
Okay. I want to know your recommendations for sustainable places in Tel Aviv, whether that be cafes that don't do had pami and that they have like glass takeaway options or something like that, to places that, meaning like beyond just compost, but like businesses that are eco-friendly, eco-conscious or sustainable, companies or small businesses that are all locally sourced, that play into, you know, our goals. Because at the end of the day, like, as much as we want to be like low waste, we still go out for coffees and we still go and do stuff. So I would love a little bit of a guide from you as to where to go in Israel.
Wow, I love this. I don't know of any place that does compost, like a coffee shop that would compost their coffee grounds would be amazing. And I don't know any place that has glass to-go containers. I just want to like think about that for a bit. I think the most sustainable thing you could do would to go to the place that you already love, the restaurant, the coffee shop, the bar that you want to support, that you love going to, and tell them that sustainability is important to you, and tell them that, you know, you would appreciate it if they would let go of those straws, or if they had compost for their coffee grounds, if you could, you know, help them figure out a solution for to-go containers. Or like there's a study that shows that giving discounts to people who bring their own cup doesn't actually create big enough incentive to make a difference. But if you charge extra for a cup, right? So like your coffee is, let's say, 14 shekels, and you would have to pay 18 shekels in a to-go container, that would make an impact. So you could like bring up these ideas, say, I want to support you. I love your business. I think these things could be really doable. What do you think? And I think that takes a lot of courage. And of course, I haven't done that to the businesses I go to, but I think that'd be a cool challenge. Maybe I'll challenge myself to do that and see how it goes and report back to you guys, because it's not about finding that one sustainable business and saying, you guys are perfect. You're doing everything 100% correctly. You're vegan, you're local. That's going to be one business. This could be applied to anywhere. And for everyone to make 1% of an improvement would make a much bigger difference globally and impact the fight for sustainability more than just supporting one restaurant that is doing it, quote unquote, correctly. That makes sense. I just wanted to thank Maya now for sending in these questions that got me thinking and helped me create this first episode of the Zev Rovel podcast. I feel really excited about this project, and I want to hear from you what you want to hear about, what you want to learn about. Because you guys are the Zev Rovels that are the fuel of this revolution. You are the cleanest energy that exists. Yeah, I like that. All spicy. So tell me what you want to hear about. Leave a review if you want more of this. And tell friends to listen to this podcast. If you listened and you learned something, please share it with other people. I would love for this to be a resource of using this platform to share ideas and rambles and rants. And if you learned something, please pass it on. So that's it for this first episode. Woo-hoo, we did it. And next episode, I'm going to be interviewing Tamara Sharon Ross, who's the co-executive director of the Heschel Center for Sustainability, which is super freaking cool, super rebellious. I think that what they're doing is amazing, and I'm excited to discuss with her about sustainability, about their programs, what they're up to. And until then, stay rebellious. Bye, Ripples.